in my kitchen. Prayers are to be raining her door.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, 'tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the One Country's Most Delicious Hour. Hope you had a good weekend. Wild weather. Yesterday was crazy. I like weather. Hope you managed to get to Farmer's Market. And if you got to the one in Santa Rosa, hope you managed to stay upright for a while, man. That wind was taking everything down. Last week, we were going to have Ann Fisher Silva, the nutritionist and esthetician from Petaluma, on. And she got a really bad flu. So we will be rescheduling Ann for her second visit here to Mouthful, probably sometime later this month. In the meantime, there's somebody that I have so looked forward to talking to for so long in so many ways. And it's great because he contacted me and was like, oh boy. It is John Beck. You may have read him in the Press Democrat. You may still read him on the Press Democrat website. Did lots and lots of really cool stuff about music, but is also a filmmaker and has a new film that will be screened at the upcoming Sonoma International Film Festival next Friday, a week from Friday, April 13th, and Saturday, April 14th. So we will be talking about that, and we'll be talking about some other things, including Plug Your Ears, Joey, Ugly Dogs. On that note, John Beck, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to see you. I'm so glad you thought to reach out to me about the new film Harvest.
I've never even been in KRCB before.
Really?
So this is kind of cool.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm surprised some of the DJs didn't have you on or
something. No, no, no,
no. Okay. So let's start out first with the Press Democrat, because you were there, what, 12 years?
12 years as a staff writer, and then like the last 2 years I've written freelance in the paper and the website.
Right. Yeah, and music?
Music, film, and it was kind of, okay. Man, I wrote about everything.
I knew you mostly from music and probably just because that's such a passion for me.
Yeah, totally.
So.
No, I think I've written about, almost every musician in Sonoma County, maybe twice.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, from Charlie Musselwhite to Tom Waits to Mickey Hart to,
And Don Giovanni's?
I have not, actually. Oh, so there you go.
A personal favorite.
And actually, some of my favorites are not the well-known musicians. Uh-huh. One of my favorite stories ever was an Elvis impersonator who had work done, paid for by his fans, plastic surgery to look more like Elvis. So I interviewed him and his plastic surgeon and his fans. And, some of those are the most memorable stories.
Yeah, I bet. He wasn't from here.
Rick Lindsay was his name.
And he was from here?
Yes, Santa Rosa.
Wow. Yeah. That's a big commitment.
It is.
Yeah. So... Now there's a film. How many films have you made?
I've made two shorts and two features.
Okay, so it was Worst in Show a
that
feature?
That was the last feature, and it was kind of a behind the scenes on the Ugly Dog Circuit, leading up to the most people know the World's Ugliest Dog Contest in Petaluma.
Right.
And so
so there's a whole circuit.
There's a circuit.
Minor
from
competition.
L.A. up to Fort Bragg to Sacramento. And so we followed the owners and their dogs, and as you can imagine, the owners are even more interesting than the dogs.
I bet.
And Yeah, we premiered it in 2011 at the SF Indie Fest and took it kind of around the country, and it actually got picked up by a distributor, and
it did.
And it's going to make its momentous cable premiere on Logo Channel, which is Viacom's gay channel. Run with that, Michelle.
Wow. Okay.
You know you've made it in the world.
Yeah, I'm trying to make the link, Ugly Dogs and the Gay Channel, and there, I just can't quite figure that out.
I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
No.
We can leave that for Outbeat. Yes, they're coming up next. Yes. Maybe we'll get some insight from them. So now you took a unique look at Harvest, and there's a subtitle, The Blood, Sweat, and Tears That Go Into Every Bottle of Wine.
Yeah, I wanted to show. I mean, you buy a bottle of wine at Safeway or wherever, and you have no idea what went into the kind of the making of it and the blue collar side of it. So I followed basically from August 23rd last year
until 2011.
Yeah, 2011. Yeah. And until November, and followed every step of the way and tried to follow kind of all walks of life. So there's an all-female picking crew that I follow them. I follow Fappiano Winery, Robledo, Raffinelli, Harvest Moon, and
Robert Hunter.
Mm-hmm. And also followed an home winemaker as well. So
Bob Bennett, right?
Yeah, do you know him?
He's been on Mouthful a couple
awesome.
Of times. He's a
yeah.
great guy.
I mean, the guy has like 11 varietals on 3 acres. I mean, it's amazing. So I followed, you know, and I don't know if you remember last year's harvest, but it was horrible. I mean, the rains came and botrytis mm-hmm. set in, and to begin with, it was a rainy spring, so the yield was lower to begin with. So, I mean, people in the film, in a way, their misfortune is my good fortune. Yeah.
It was very cool.
Yeah, they all called it the toughest harvest of their lifetime. Old timers like, you know, Ronaldo Robledo or Dave Raffinelli. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Cool. And so is this going to be the premiere?
This is the first time anybody will see this. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's going to be at Sebastiani Winery, which is appropriate. It's going to be in their barrel room.
Perfect.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool because the women, you know, I approached this. It's an all-female crew. They don't often have, they have women picking in the vineyards, but they don't really have all-female crews that often.
Right.
And they did it this year because they knew it was a bad harvest to begin with, and they wanted that attention to detail and the meticulous, you know. And so men have a tendency to slash and burn and go through these vineyards really fast because you're getting paid by the bin. And so it was really fascinating.
And by the
to
bin,
see,
we should say a bin of grapes.
Yeah.
And how much
they have
kids?
Numbers on the bins, and so they're racing through, and as they dump it, they'll say seis or you know siete, and but the women wanted them to go through slowly and trim out the botrytis and be really meticulous about
it. Did they get paid differently?
They did, and they in the end they weren't always so happy about that either. We see scenes in the movie where they're arguing about how much they got paid at the last pick and stuff like that. But three of them really opened up to me and invited me into their houses. They told me their border crossing stories.
Oh, really?
And, you know, and so what you realize, I mean, I should actually backtrack. Probably I got paid to shoot a promo video for Wine Road. Do you know Wine Road? They put on Winter Wineland and Barrel Tasting of Night Harvest in 2010. So all of a sudden it was like 2 a.m, I'm out at Fappiano and it looks like a UFO has landed in the vineyards.
When you're driving through in the middle of the night and harvest or frost control is going on, it's eerie.
Yeah.
It looks like some weird operation from another planet.
And suddenly you're in the middle of it and it's 2 a.m. and there's a sense of urgency. We have to get these grapes off right now. So there's drama all around you. So I was hooked from that moment on. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions I had is, where do these people come from? What sacrifices have they made to be there at that vineyard at that exact moment with a tiny headlamp on their head picking grapes? You know, and so with three of the women, they told me very different border crossing stories. You know, one woman her group was attacked by thieves as they were crossing. I mean, and we never even... I was just talking to Gabe Moline at the Boho about this a little while ago. We never broached the topic. I had a translator with me because my Spanish is pretty bad. But during the interview, about an hour in, I just said, you know, maybe they can share their border crossing story. And there was never a hesitation. You know, they just went in and told the whole, you know, pretty harrowing, you know, stories.
And then how did they end up here? Do they end up here specifically because of harvest? Do they know that there's that this kind of work and that's attractive to them?
You know, one of them, that was the case. She had heard, she had seen, she grew up in a small village in the state of Michoacan, and she had seen people come back from the U.S., and they come back with really, really nice clothes and nice shoes, and so she'd heard these stories growing up. So she kind of, her mom didn't want her to go, but she kind of ran away and came here and wound up harvesting grapes, which is what her intention was. But two mm-hmm. other women, that was their, it was their first time harvesting, and they were just looking for work, and they had heard that, you know, during that window, that 3 month window, you can make pretty good money.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty tough work.
Very tough work. I picked for 3 hours with them one day, and oh my God. I mean, there's such attention to detail too that you have mm-hmm. to have. I mean, you have to really move your hands pretty fast and know what you're doing. And
but
you're
not
also,
cut yourself.
And not cut yourself, which I did actually.
Yeah. I think the knife that's used for cutting grapes is scary.
The sriracha, yeah. And the women use scissors.
That makes more sense to me.
Yeah, and they also move their feet though. So imagine you're cutting right now and then you're moving the bin with your foot along and then you're going to the next bunch.
And so it's
bunch.
Just dropping into the bin.
Yeah, yeah. And the guy who was their vineyard manager, his concern from the beginning was that they wouldn't have the stamina and the strength because you got to lift those bins once they're full and they're like 30 pounds or so.
See, now that part seems to me to be the easy part.
The lifting
grapes. It's that... Yeah. that getting a rhythm going so that you're cutting the clusters right. But yeah. I've watched people and think, man, I'm surprised there's not more fingers lost.
You know, there are cuts. They'll tell you, though, that people do get cut, especially certain vineyards have lights they set up all around the vineyard and it's well lit. Other ones that don't have as much money just have those tiny headlamps you buy mm-hmm. at Walmart. And, I mean, they're just, you can barely see your fingers, your hands. Mm. But also they pick on steep grades too, mm-hmm. and that can really wear you down. It's all about, there's a guy in the movie who says it's all about the lower body, and these guys will actually start training on exercise bikes.
Oh, to get their strength in their lower body.
Because you're going under the rows, the vineyard rows a lot, and popping up and then dumping and then going back to where you were picking. And there's a whole art form to this. I mean, it's like a sport and an art form at the same time. Yeah.
Let's take a little musical interlude here, and we'll be right back with more talk with John Beck. No, you're... It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. My guest is John Beck. We're talking about his new movie, Harvest. We'll be talking about the other movie, too, and maybe the shorts, if he'll go that direction. So you focused on five family wineries.
Yes.
Little guy. Well, yeah. Not yeah, relatively I mean, it's small, not... but some very well-known.
Raffinelli.
I think
your favorite? Yes.
Favorite?
I'm putting you on the spot here.
You are. And of this group, I don't really have a favorite.
Yeah.
There are things that I really appreciate about all of them. I did a couple of lengthy stories on the Robledos,
mm-hmm.
and spent a lot of time with Vanessa. And they took me to
amazing.
Her mom's house.
Yeah.
Her mom cooked the most amazing lunch. Oh, and they had just the most gorgeous view.
Yeah.
Of their vineyards and the vineyards that are now theirs. I just think the Robledo story is a wonderful, wonderful story, and I love their winery. Fabiano, one thing about, I think it's Lou Jr., and we should say condolences to the family for on the death of Lou Sr.
Yeah.
Lou Jr. is a great animal lover.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and I remember one day I went to see them a number of years ago to interview him for a story. And there were like seven kittens or something. They were in his office running all little tiny things. And for many years, Fabiano has given wines for the Paws for Love benefit,
oh, cool.
which is a really great, great animal benefit. It benefits animals who really don't have don't get much other help. They're homeless, sheltered, abandoned, mistreated animals. It gives money to help them get fostered and to get them medical care. And then, let's see, who else?
Well, I should tell you that his grandson, Paul Fabiano, has this giant burly beard, and he looks like Brian Wilson, the pitcher for the Giants.
Really?
The San Francisco Giants. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he looks good in the movie. Yeah.
Cool. And then there's Robert Hunter Winery, which I don't know so well directly. I know their wines, of course, but I don't really know those people directly. And then Harvest Moon, I think, is really fun.
Yeah, Randy Pitts.
Yeah.
He's great. And he kind of grew up in Santa Rosa, and his parents grew grapes for Deloach down the road.
Right. Yeah.
And then he kind of went down to the city and kind of rode the wave of that kind of 90s corporate boom, and then got out of it and came back home. And he's kind of the comic relief in the film. Yeah.
So does the picking technique, does that sort of thing vary among these different people that you feature? It must vary to some degree. I mean, are there different techniques?
Well, it's interesting. In the film, people are transitioning to machine harvesting. And there's a whole vignette about... No, seriously, these things run 24/7. And when they have labor problems and labor issues, they turn to machines.
But do the smaller wineries do that?
Well, check... Fabiano, we're out there at 2 a.m. I mean, I filmed almost every day for about 2.5 months. And... for the beginning of their Sauvignon Blanc harvest, they picked with a machine. And Paul and I climbed up one of the towers and filmed it from up there and rode along with it. And he said, basically, you can get one machine to do what 50 guys will do. And this is the trend. Even Raffinelli doesn't do it yet, but they could see the benefit. Robledo does it
down
in the Carneros. They do machine harvesting like nonstop.
Now, do you have to do anything differently? Do you have to space the rows differently, do a different sort of canopy, and the canopy, of course, being the leaves? Do you have to do different things?
I'm trying to think what Robledo's harvest was. It was a red, and I can't remember. It may have been their cab. I'm not sure. You can't do the machine harvesting on the steep grade.
Sure.
Raffinelli was pointing that out at their place. But it does beat the hell out of the vines. I mean, you see them just getting thrashed.
Yeah.
And Dave Raffinelli made the point that other things will get in there, too.
Yes.
Lizards.
Snakes,
shoes.
Gophers.
yeah,
I've talked about that. And I've talked about that with some people who do machine harvesting of tomatoes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the same thing. You'll get, more than just tomatoes.
Oh my God, I would think it would destroy the tomato vines. I guess it doesn't matter though. It
doesn't matter because they're annuals.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a trend. I think the Press Democrat did a story at some point too on it. I mean, that's where things are headed.
Really?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But these, I mean, I chose small family wineries, some that I had connections to. I had filmed at Fabiano and Raffinelli before. But Robledo, like you said, I loved their story. That story is amazing that he came across during the Braceros program or post-Braceros. Ronaldo Robledo was a a migrant worker, and now he owns his own winery. I mean, that journey is amazing. But I called them out of the blue, and I said,
"Oh, really?
This is what I'm doing. I'd love for you to be a part of this." And they jumped on board immediately. And as you'll see on the poster, Vanessa Robledo is one of the associate producers. So
I did not see that part. So, yes, there's her name, and she's great.
She's awesome.
She is just really a remarkable businesswoman, and very articulate.
Yes, and she's now with Black Coyote Winery. In Napa, I believe. We see them. They harvest their grapes at the Robledo winery. So she's in the film quite a bit.
She's. I have a lot of admiration for Vanessa. I think she's really great.
She's
now, the one that stands out as really different is Bob Bennett and Bennett Ridge Vineyard, home winemaker. I mean, I think he was in charge of the home winemaking judging at the Harvest Fair for a long time.
Oh, he's like the guru of home winemakers in Sonoma County.
And so he's got, what, 3 acres?
He's got like 3 acres.
But he's not harvesting. I mean, he doesn't have a harvest crew, does he?
He goes and gets migrant laborers down at like Hillsborough, occasionally. But he picks it. He and his wife, you'll see in the film, pick grapes all the time, just the two of them. Or they sell to other home winemakers, and they'll come out and pick their own grapes. So he offers this whole kind of do-it-yourself experience, but there are 11 varietals on 3 acres, and this scene didn't make it in the film, but there's one point where he did some like what is it called, crossbreeding, or what happens when you cross
crossbreeding
the vines, you know?
Yeah,
he crosses them, so it's like Merlot and something else mixed, and so as they're picking, they have to know which bunch to pick because it's on the same vine. He's done some funky things on there, but it's amazing. I mean, he has a guy that drives out from Phoenix every year with a truck and picks his grapes at Bob's property there and drives back. So,
And he drives out to pick the grapes because he likes picking, or to take them back to Phoenix?
To take them back to Phoenix and make the wine.
Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So he has a loyal crew that, for him, it was one of the worst harvests ever. I mean, at one point in the film, he pulls up on his four-wheeler. He's been picking like nonstop for days. It's raining. He's soaking wet. And he looks in the camera and goes, "This sucks." But it's farming, you know. And he's not, as you know, if you know him, he's not the kind of guy that would say that.
No, he's very much a gentleman.
Yeah. And that happened throughout this. I mean, in a way, their misfortune is my good fortune. I hate to say that. But if I had just filmed an average year of harvest, it would have been kind of interesting and educational. Mm-hmm. But there is a little bit more drama when it's really a tough year like this. And like someone like Gennaro Robledo, who is Vanessa's brother, he was really measured throughout the thing. And he would just kind of give me interesting answers, but they were kind of, you know, one-liners, two-liners. And I caught him on a day where his entire Chardonnay was just, I mean, like 50 to 60% of the crop was gone. And he said, "This is horrible." And it looked like he wanted to cry almost.
Sure.
I mean, so.
Now, how far did you take it? You filmed them every day picking?
Almost every day. You know, I was looking at my log earlier, at least every other day.
And then at what point during the day, at what point of activity did you stop?
Well, they mostly work, a lot of these, you know, wineries work at night. They want to pick these grapes when they're really cold.
Right.
And they don't kind of macerate in the bins. And then the filming is at night or in the magic hour in the morning. So the lighting is really good.
Yeah.
They don't really go through into the afternoons often.
But you don't follow them then from the grapes going then into
No, it's
the,
all just harvest.
Just harvest.
Yeah, at the very end of this, there's kind of a montage where there's a Spanish blessing, a priest is blessing the grapes, and then they're doing kind of a harvest celebration at Robledo, and you're starting to see the grapes coming in. And going across the conveyor belt and being pressed and that kind of thing. But I was really interested in the physical labor and kind of the grit and the kind of blue collar side to this. So.
During harvest, during this time, with these crews that you watched, do they have any life beyond harvest? I mean, that's sort of what I imagine, that they're harvesting and then eating, going to sleep, getting up, harvesting.
And getting up like at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
You do get that feeling. There are moments. I have a kind of a cool vignette where they stop and play baseball in the middle of Boleto Vineyards.
Boleto's in there?
Yeah, just for that one scene. I mean, it's one of those things.
That's a, for people who don't know, John Belletto has a baseball diamond out in the middle of his fields that border the Laguna. And I did a whole vineyard walk with him, I think, last year.
Isn't it beautiful out there?
It's gorgeous. And then for there to be this great baseball diamond.
It's like the Field of Dreams. Instead, yeah. In that movie, it was corn around the edges. It's grapevines.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. I got up really early because I was going to do this take where I did time lapse. So I woke up at sunset, and their game wasn't until, like, I think noon or something. And sunrise. I woke up at sunrise and set up a camera looking at, you know, the home plate. And then I was going to kind of cross dissolve after I did time lapse and have a guy hitting the first ball. Well, it didn't quite work out that way, but I got to hang out there as the sun was coming up, and it's, uh-huh. The lake is there. And
yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's really gorgeous. Yeah. And you see all of that wildlife from the Laguna. And the Laguna is just such a treasure, especially mm-hmm. depending on the time of year. Mm-hmm. Right now, if you get a chance to take a hike in the Laguna, it's mm-hmm. really gorgeous.
And that, for me, just amounted to, like, it's maybe a 60-second vignette, but it's a nice little breather. You get to see what they're doing when they're not picking grapes.
Mm-hmm. So. Do they take a lunch break?
One day I shot, they actually... the guy who's in charge of the female pickers, he brought a taco truck out there.
Right on.
And, yeah, but that wasn't every day. Sure. They do take breaks, and they take water breaks. And
Yeah, I was just curious because sometimes there's really good food involved with harvest.
There's actually a scene with a guy who's... It's 2 in the morning, and we're in his kitchen. It's a guy named Rudy Rodriguez, and he... is the kind of vineyard manager for Robert Hunter.
Yeah, I know that guy.
Yeah, and he's actually making his burrito at 2 in the morning. And so he's talking to me and explaining what a bad harvest it is as he's making and rolling it up. Uh-huh. And then he puts it into his thermos.
Thermos, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's what he's going to do later in the day, is eat that killer burrito.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that sometimes they'll come to work with a thermos full of hot tortillas and then take it out and maybe they have some chili verde, something. Mexican food is one of my all-time favorites. So I'm always curious.
I kind of wanted to eat the food at, you know,
sure.
2 in the morning there. Yeah,
yeah.
It was amazing. Yeah. I also know I have a sound guy who's been working on this, and he was. We had to lay in like the sound of hamburger sizzling to do this, and the sound of aluminum foil wrapping, and so it's always
sure.
interesting the post production stuff that as you're filming it at the moment you're thinking, oh, this is great, da da da, and then the sound guy gets in and goes, no,
yeah, didn't work.
Yeah.
So. Interesting. Okay, we're going to take one more musical break here on Mouthful, and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
It's Michelle. Thanks for tuning in. If you're just joining us, my guest this evening, John Beck, writer, filmmaker. You probably do a lot of other things, too.
Kayaker. Father. I have a year-old daughter.
You're old.
Yeah.
How old?
Little Zoe.
How old? Zoe.
Hey, Zoe, if you're out there.
And when was she born?
January 15th.
January 15th. Cool.
Yes.
Great age.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, she's really starting to express herself. And,
Yeah, and you live in that great little town of Benicia. Very
Benicia.
Interesting place.
Her grandfather was the mayor of Benicia.
The mayor of Benicia.
Yes.
When?
Oh, wow. Now you're really jogging memory.
Okay.
Maybe five, 6 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fairly recently.
Yes. Yeah.
It's an interesting place.
A lot of history.
Yeah. Was it the first capital of California?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought
it was
so.
Just for a year. It was
yeah,
a capital.
Sure.
Yeah.
And of course, we know where its name came from.
Doña Benicia.
Yes.
Or Benicia.
Benicia.
Yeah.
Yeah, the wife of General Vallejo.
That's right. Yeah.
So anyway, there you go. A quick.
You lived there apparently once.
I did live there. I lived there for about 3 years, and there were some interesting things that went on. If you want a little, you can find anyone who remembers this story.
Okay.
We lived about half a block from. The park, the city park, which must be still there.
It's at First and Military, right there.
Right, and I lived at Military and Third, maybe.
Okay.
So very close. And I was cleaning my house. I had two little girls, and a friend had taken my little girls, I think they were 1.5 and 3, something like that, had taken them to the park, and all of a sudden there were all these sirens. Like a lot of, and the
that would be every police officer in Benicia.
Yeah, and
all two of them.
The police station was almost kitty corner from across from us, and not that far from the park. So, like, something big's going on if there are all those sirens. And I'm looking out, and I think it was even blocked off. I think I couldn't get there, and so I called the police department. They said, "I'm sorry. We cannot talk about what's going on." And finally, I just said, "My children are I have two young daughters. My children are at the park." I was terrified. I said, "You have to tell me what's going on." And she said, "I can't, but I can tell you that it does not involve children. It does not involve small children." Well, it turns out that when I first moved to Benicia, I lived on East H Street. I think it was H or H. I lived on H Street, and
there's that siren that goes off.
I don't know.
Okay, sorry.
No,
yeah,
I don't know about that. Okay. But there was a house next door to me, and it was a man, kind of a mean guy, former military. I don't think he was still in the military. He'd married, I think, a Japanese woman and had maybe three daughters. And he was very strict and very mean. But the daughters would babysit for me sometimes, for my girl sometimes. Anyway, the older daughter had gotten a boyfriend, and he had found out that she'd had sex with him. He walked into the park and shot him.
Oh. You know, that happens like once every 20 years in Benicia. We call it Mayberry by the Bay.
Yeah, I mean, there was that.
If you look at the police log, it's normally like we interrupted some skateboarders, and then we caught some more skateboarders, and then, you know.
Somebody called because they had mice.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And
wow.
It was huge. It was a huge, awful thing.
Your kids were in the park?
My kids were in the park.
Oh,
my older daughter
man.
Saw it happen because she knew. I mean, they knew her. Debbie, I think, was the name of the girl. And he just walked up and shot and killed this teenage boy because he'd had sex with his daughter.
Mm.
So it was...
Nothing like that happens in my movie, I promise.
Good. I'm glad to know that. And I have been watching the movie, but my computer got really cranky. My computer needs to go to the doctor. So, and it wouldn't... I put it into my iMac, and it wouldn't read it.
It wouldn't play?
No, it was weird.
I hope this doesn't happen at the screening, because it's Friday the 13th is the actual. Are you superstitious at all?
Yes, but Friday the 13th is a good day.
Okay.
It will be fine.
Okay, good.
It's a good day. We're going to come back to Harvest, but I want to talk a little bit now about the making of Worst in Show.
Oh, man, where should we start?
Well, why did you do it?
Yeah, I like obsession as a subject. And
I do, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's... You can go anywhere with it. And these owners, there's one guy, this says it all. There's one guy in the film who has been through four ugly dogs, and he's bred them. So he started when he was like 10 years old. Yes. And he's been there. He holds the Guinness record for, you know, the most wins. And this guy, his name's Dane. Dane, if you're out there, we love you. You follow them around, and it's their life. He has pictures of, you know, Pam Anderson hugging his dog, or Jay Leno, and so he was kind of the ringer. And then we had like the rookie come in, you know, a guy with a mohawk whose dog has a mohawk too, and from Sacramento, and so all these characters. So I had actually covered it for the Press Democrat years ago, and my filmmaking partner Don Lewis and I were looking for a new documentary, and we thought, why not just at least go to one of the events? Because there is an ugly dog circuit. There are like at least 10 contests around the state of California.
This is bringing to mind the same sort of obsession that, was it Terrence Malick? Who was it with, not Terrence Malick, but who was it in Gates of Heaven?
Yeah.
Is it? I mean, that would make a great double bill, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or Best in Show with it. Best in Show and Worst of Show at the same screening.
There's
yes,
that.
Like, yeah. At some point, the owners are, like I said earlier, are way more interesting than the dogs themselves.
First of all, the dogs don't know they're ugly.
Well, they don't, and they're hairless and one-eyed and toothless. I mean, there was one dog who won one year. He was dying of cancer. He had three legs and one eye, and they had to change the rules the next year because they started, there was like this
people
possibility.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not that you and I would do it, but, it's very strange, you know, if you start to look at like why people are doing this and why people are fascinated. It's one of the biggest stories every year for Associated Press at the end of the year when they look at most popular stories, because it goes around the world. I mean, at the event in Petaluma, you have tabloid photographers from England and Japanese press and Brazilian press are there. I mean, it's a huge story.
Do we know why?
Well, pet stories are huge.
Pet, okay.
But when they have no hair and missing teeth and, yeah.
It just seems kind of sad.
There's a certain sadness. And there was a movie called American Movie that was a documentary where, obsession. The guy is so hell-bent on making a horror film, and he's in Milwaukee, and this came out like 10 years ago. But it becomes sad at some point.
Uh-huh.
And this is the same thing, this obsession with these dogs and how far you can kind of ride the fame of your dog. It becomes a little strange.
Now, this is like a way of life for the people. Are the dogs,
The redeeming quality in this
are
film.
Are they pampered?
They're good. Yes, they're very well loved. Okay. But most of them are rescue dogs. Like 90% of them are rescue dogs.
Oh, really? Oh, well, that's cool.
And the year we covered it, it was a dog in Lake County who was left for dead. And this woman rescued it from the pound. And the dog's missing an eye and has deformed paws. And Princess Abby. And so she won. She stumbled on this contest and heard that she could get a free vet checkup, at the contest. So she came for the vet checkup and won the whole thing. So she came out of nowhere. So we were following like five owners and their dogs, and they're all backstabbing and hating each other and this kind of stuff.
So they're backstabbing because they think, because they want to win?
There's modeling contracts. There's a place called House of Dog out of LA that gives you a modeling contract if you win. I mean, I'm not making this up. And one guy tried to steal the other guy's modeling contract, telling him that it was worthless and you shouldn't do it, so he could kind of hone in on it. So anyways, this woman comes out of nowhere, and she works at the Kmart up in Lakeport and rescued this dog and suddenly came in and won the whole thing. And suddenly she's being whisked away to the Today Show 2 days later in New York. And you have the animal control officer in the film going, "What? No one from Lakeport's ever been to New York." And, you know, and she's the most heartwarming. She's the nicest woman I maybe have ever met. And so it just, the whole thing takes, it's absurd and silly. And then at some point, it kind of has this heart to it. And so we got some good mileage out of the
interesting documentary. And what year was it that it came out?
Last year.
Last year, okay.
Yeah, last February, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then, and it's going to be on what channel? Say that again.
The Logo channel. I'm sure Logo. No one's heard of this. It's Comcast 146. This is like straight to DVD. Like, this is like a very secondary, third uh-huh. market, but hey, they're owned by Viacom, so they pay good money. So
shouldn't it be on the Animal Planet?
Well, exactly. Well, you know, the dog Gus that won that year, Animal Planet kind of, they no longer cover the contest. They used to cover it every year,
mm-hmm.
and they had such a backlash from this one-legged, cancer-stricken dog that they, from the fans and people writing hate mail, that they no longer cover the contest.
Oh.
We tried, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then two shorts, right? You did two short films?
Yeah. I did a Don Lewis and I did. We started back in like 2002, a film called Stringers, and it's these guys who drive around San Francisco with police scanners at all hours of the night and show up at fires and car wrecks and stabbings, sometimes before the cops even get there, and shoot footage, and they sell it to the TV stations. So anytime you see that really grainy shots of like fire flames coming out of windows and stuff, because most of the TV guys are union guys, and they don't work from, you know, 11 till 6 in the morning. So these guys, and one guy was like a Vietnam vet. Another guy was in a wheelchair and would kind of pull up and get his chair out and kind of slip into it and go. Another guy was kind of a speed freak. And so we kind of were the lens within a lens. We were in the back seat, you know, filming them. So we got like a 15-minute film out of it. And I mean, back then, we're talking like 12 years ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't know what we were doing. I mean, for me, I'm a journalist first and then a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So I kind of knew the story I wanted to tell. Mm-hmm. But the stylistic, you know, we were editing on iMovie, and I mean, it was just kind of ridiculous. But that film went and won the best short doc at the Austin Film Festival in 2006. Cool. So that kind of helped us move along. So as long as every movie gets better than the last movie, I'm happy. Yeah.
And then what was the next
We did something called Drag King that was filmed up in Lake County at the Lakeport Speedway. And they actually... Have you heard of this? They drag boats around a track. There's no water involved. And so fiberglass, they call it the Fiberglass 500. And they go around this track as fast as they can and try to destroy the other person's boat. Not, it's a car dragging a boat behind it. And so
so it's like the Demolition Derby or something.
Just with the boats, yeah. So it's called boat racing in Lake County. You'd think it'd be on the water, but it's on this track. And it's, I mean, it's obsession once again.
Yeah. So. Interesting. So... What obsession are you thinking about pursuing next?
Oh, my God. I don't know. You mentioned you're from Vallejo, right? Do you not admit to this?
Actually, I've started admitting.
Yeah, you have.
The last few years I've been admitting. I didn't for a long time. I was traumatized by Vallejo. But, you know, I've come to... There's some really interesting things about it.
Well,
and one thing that was always great, first of all, in Vallejo... It's like the Midwest of Northern California, and they identify for the most part with Sacramento, even though San Francisco's 25 minutes away. Yeah. And I was more into San Francisco, but you got great radio reception. The musical exposure I got growing up was fabulous.
Because you get it across the bay there.
You get it across the bay.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of musicians from Vallejo.
Sly Stone.
Sly Stone, my brother-in-law. Yeah. Was in a band with Sly Stone.
And his brother is a pastor at a church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Sly Stone. But John Lee Hooker lived there for a long time.
I believe it. Yeah.
All kinds of musicians. And there was a really great black culture there. And there still is.
And a Filipino culture. I went to a place the other day. It's called Hugh's Soul for You. And it's a Thai Southern fusion. So they have a red curry gumbo.
Oh my God.
It was incredible.
I have to go.
Yeah. I mean, it was, there's this weird mashup going there with the food. Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't all bad growing up in Vallejo. And what was bad probably had to do less with Vallejo than I thought at the time.
Yeah. Well, you always want to get out of the town you're growing up in. I mean, I grew up in Tallahassee, Florida. So I'm 3,000 miles away. You know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the worst creatures in the world are eighth grade girls. If you want to win a war, send eighth grade girls. And I was the nice eighth grade girls. And so I was just like devastated by them all the time. But so anyway,
I want to film something there. I don't know if the Chronicle did a story about 3 or 4 months ago, and I may be late on this, but the town went bankrupt and they cut their police force in half. And apparently hookers from all over Nevada and Washington, Oregon, all over were coming to Vallejo to ply their trade.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah, and so I thought, you know, that could be an interesting documentary, but I've heard they've cleaned things up after the story ran, so I don't know. It's too early to say what's... Yes. I got to kind of ride this little pony and hopefully take this...
And we're going to come back. We're going to come back to this little pony right about now. So it's Harvest. You're going to be showing it at the film festival. It's the Sonoma International Film Festival.
Yes.
What does the screening involve? Just walking in and seeing the movie? Or are you going to have some of the people from the film there?
Yeah, we'll have tons of people from the film. I was actually driving around for the last 2 hours trying to track down some of the women. Their phone numbers had changed. They'd moved to make sure they're there. It's going to be it's really cool. You come in, you watch the movie. We'll do a Q&A afterwards. We'll drag up people that are in the movie. movie. The women grape pickers, Paul Fappiano, Shelley Raffinelli, the winemakers, the winery owners, they'll all talk about their experience. And then afterwards, the wineries are going to pour wines that were actually harvested. The Sauvignon Blanc that we see machine harvested in the film from Fappiano is going to be poured, you know, afterwards. So it'll be kind of a little reception afterwards. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Excellent.
So,
and that's happening.
That's happening Friday. The premiere is 5 p.m. Friday, April 13th, and then it screens again the next day at 3 o'clock Saturday. And both screenings are at the Sebastiani Winery.
Mm-hmm. And the website is harvestmovie.com.
That's it. And then and tomorrow tickets go on sale also at SonomaFilmFest.org.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, I got something in the mail. I think offering me a press. Tickets.
You're not going to pay? Is that what you're saying? I mean,
I was afraid the tickets were going to be sold out. And I actually, I had the dates a little bit mixed up and I thought I couldn't come, but I'm realizing I could actually be there on the
13th. You would love this. That would be awesome.
But I thought tickets were already on sale and I thought, oh God, as usual, I'm too late.
The Film Fest is very late. I've covered this festival as a writer many years and they're a little late getting the tickets out, but it's all good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, I think it's a great thing. Well, we've got a few minutes left.
Oh my God.
So how does it
Has it
end?
Already been an hour?
It's been 50 minutes.
Oh, I got to tell you, I thought it was going to be so daunting. You're so easy to talk
to. I thought it
was, yeah. Do you remember my email?
Yeah.
I go, I've only been on like 5 minutes, 10 minutes before. You know, what are we
going to
talk about for an hour?
Zach, yeah, don't worry.
Oh my God.
So yeah, but we've got about 5 or 6 minutes
five
left.
5 or 6 minutes. So, do you want to sing?
I don't think anyone wants me to sing. Huh. But basically what we have left is the amount of time that you've spent on other radio shows.
And what did I say on those shows? With the ugly dog thing, can I mention other stations? Of course. Well, we were on KFOG, and like, how do you convey an ugly dog on radio? So they said, bring in the dog.
Oh, yeah.
And so we brought in the dog. It was this dog named Icky from Sacramento.
Icky?
And Icky has a mohawk, and the owner has a mohawk, and tattoos on his head and everything. The owner. And their goal was to scare the dog and get him to bark. And they could not. And they'd run across the room and stamp their feet. And so it was kind of this pointless.
The dog would only bark when it was scared.
But it wouldn't even. They couldn't scare it.
They couldn't scare it. Oh.
Yeah. Poor dog.
You know, we could make Joey. Joey's being very quiet. But if we wanted Joey to bark, all we would have to do is.
Let's do it. Come on. Is that your dog? Hey, Joey.
Usually if you clap. Yeah, he'll bark because that's how he claps. He joins.
Joey's
in.
Not a very ugly dog, though.
No, Joey could be in Best of Show. He couldn't be in
Worst in Show. No. How old is Joey?
Joey turned 10 on 10-10-10.
That's creepy.
That makes him 11.
Okay.
But he's actually pretty lively.
You're not superstitious at all? I have a grandmother who walked through someone's backyard. The owner of the house caught her walking through their backyard because she was avoiding a black cat that was in the road. I think it's been handed down. So the screening on Friday the 13th, I'm like, I don't know.
I'm superstitious in the opposite way, though. Okay. Like Friday the 13th, to me, those are like witches' Sabbaths.
So it's a good thing.
And to me, cats are black. Right. If you say cat to me, I think black. And otherwise, it has to be qualified. You have to say, oh, it was a striped cat. It was a tiger cat. Right. Yeah. I have two right now black cats. I've had several in my time. We're all a little superstitious, but the things that are typically
walking
seen,
under ladders, breaking a mirror.
We don't want to go that far. Okay. Yeah, you know, we don't. I mean, I wouldn't walk under a ladder. Okay. But you know, that's like in feng shui. You know, one of the things you're not supposed to do. It's bad feng shui is to sit and work under a beam. It's like, well, come on, you guys. It originated in China, and they have earthquakes there. So there's a lot of common sense.
Which
and
is
I
good
think,
for the Bay Area, though, too.
Yeah, and I think walking under a ladder has a lot of... Not walking under
it's
a ladder
logical.
Has a lot of common sense to it.
Yeah.
I think most superstitions have begun, or a lot of them have begun with common sense and then get, transferred into some sort of belief or passed on in a belief
or
system.
Or blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
They're rooted in reality.
Yeah. They're rooted in something. And I mean, I think to some degree that number 13, I bet you could probably trace that back to some Christian fear of witches.
Right.
Yeah, anyway, that's my guess. Let's talk a little bit about your music writing. What are you doing right now?
Oh, my God.
So you left the Press Democrat.
I did.
You take
I'm no
one of the
longer
buyout?
Steph.
Did you take a buyout?
I did not.
Oh, you no, didn't? Okay.
I did not. I cannot confess to that.
Okay. But you're still on as a freelancer.
Yes, I am. I write about a story a week. I wasn't sure at the time if I would do it that often, but it's added up to that over the years. Mm-hmm. What do I write about? I interviewed Henry Rollins recently.
Oh, cool.
That was kind of cool. He's a nice and friendly guy.
He's really articulate and really
intelligent. Very articulate. Yeah, yeah. But he's kind of like in that stage. You wonder how punk rockers, because I remember going to see Black Flag in the 80s, and I was like scared to death of the guy. I mean,
sure.
People were spitting on him on stage. I was thinking, I wouldn't spit on that guy. He'd kill me. You know, that kind of
thing.
But now he's like this super articulate, intelligent guy, and he's doing commercials for Infiniti Car. You know, you hear his voice, you know, selling cars on TV. So I like writing, still kind of keeping my ear to the ground and interviewing. But I only do it like, you know. You know, back in the day, you'd write 5 stories a week or whatever.
Yeah, well, I'm doing 4 stories a week.
Okay, so see, you know,
right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's how I pay my rent.
You know, Gabe mentioned, this is good stuff. You were at the Bohemian many, many years ago, right?
Yeah.
The Independent. And apparently the owner or publisher of that paper still talks about you. Like, I can't believe we lost Michelle Anna Jordan.
Oh,
way back
yeah,
in the
that's
day.
A story. They blew it.
Really?
Oh, yeah, they blew it.
I don't know
time.
The details. I don't know if...
Yeah, we won't talk about him on the air. We don't have...
I told him I was going to see...
And it wasn't that... That's interesting. He still talks about me.
Yeah.
It wasn't his fault. I mean, I know what happened. They shouldn't have lost me, but they did.
But you write about 4 stories a week
I do.
For the PD?
I have 4 columns a week.
Yeah.
And then I also do, when there's time and when Joanne has, you know, feature holes.
Right.
I do several features a year, and then I do a lot for Santa Rosa Magazine.
Uh-huh.
And
you used to do Saver before.
And Saver, and Saver. Well, Saver still, there may be.
Adrift.
There may be a couple Saver issues this year. There may be one.
Here's a question we can end on. What are we going to do when newspapers die?
I think he just phrased that incorrectly.
I think so.
I don't think newspapers are going to die.
News won't die.
I don't think newspapers will.
Physical papers?
Yeah, I don't
papers?
Think they will. I think it'll be like, it'll all settle in. Like, movies, nothing has died all the way except for 8-track tapes. You know?
I miss those, yeah.
8-tracks have died, but recording didn't. People are still, in fact, there's a resurgence of vinyl. You know, there's a place, you must know Mobile Fidelity Sound, they press vinyl in Sebastopol.
Yeah.
It'll shake out, and I think the press Democrat has been pretty smart. I think the ones that will vanish completely are the ones that aren't smart.
But they'll
morph
all into
out.
Something, yeah. You know, at some point there will be this people with nostalgia who will want to go back and read a newspaper, but the majority of people will get their news in a different medium, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I but think I think so. It'll be one of the, I think it will be one of the things that's available.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll be with luck. Anyway, we won't go there. And on that note, we are out of time here in Mouthful.
Give me a big high five. Come on.
Hey.
Let's see if you guys can hear this. Ready?
It's John Beck. See his film at the Sonoma International Film Festival. It is called Harvest. It will be screened on April 13th and April 14th. I will see you there on April.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thank you so much for driving over from Benicia. Meet me back. Actually, there won't be a live Mouthful next Sunday because it is Easter, and I don't do a live show on Easter because I can't get guests. Anyway, we'll have a really yummy special for you on the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing, to the Lord let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. To what the preacher said, to the Lord, praises be. It's time for dinner, now let's go eat. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said, to the Lord, praises be. It's time for dinner, now let's go eat. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen.
Let it be.
It's time for dinner now. It's going.
We got some beans and
good.